This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks so much for being there, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. It's been a busy week. It feels like 2 weeks. I guess came off vacation. I was doing Laura's show, and then I did... I'm going to do Laura's show again on Friday. I did it last night, 2 days with Jesse's show. Yesterday, I actually did Martha's show as a hit, Kudlow's show as a hit. Had the meeting for the Sunday show, which we're going to be, most of it's going to be live on Sunday. And then I had a chance to host Jesse's show. So pretty busy. It's all fun, all interesting, all exciting, and there's high stakes. This hour, we're going to be joined by some special guests, including getting you financially literate. It's going to be cool. In a matter of moments, my interview with Don Jr. and Eric Trump. But first, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
It saddens me to hear language of being told to go back where I came from. And yet it is not surprising, because it is so much of what characterizes President Trump's politics.
Right. So always blame Donald Trump. Why not? Turns out that Governor Cuomo is closing in within 14 points of Zohran Mamdani, but he's firmly in first as the socialist communist gets heckled in Staten Island, which is bright red. How the GOP is already using the rise of Bernie's disciples to knock out Dems on the cusp of the midterms.
Number two.
I live in Washington. This is personal for me. Many people are frustrated with crime that we see, particularly committed by juveniles in the city of Washington. People are frustrated.
That is Anthony Coley, who is not a Republican, more of a Democrat. He's not being honest about things in D.C. right now. Crime crackdown. D.C. is well underway in over 100 separate arrests right now. Our nation's capital is getting an overhaul in real time. It's also getting cleaned up. It's getting landscaped. And we're also helping in the urban areas. Why are Democrats pushing back against it? Some on the left are warning against them doing this 80-20 issue.
Number one.
Will Russia face any consequences if Vladimir Putin does not agree to stop the war after your meeting on Friday?
Yes, they will. I don't have to say there will be very severe consequences, yes.
Yep, the President of the United States, there is so much at stake. It's going to be so intriguing in Alaska. Today is the day that we interview Donald Trump on this show, and the 47th president gets to do his second favorite thing, and that's meet with Vladimir Putin to bring peace to Eastern Europe. Let's see if he could do that. What does success look like? I mean, we're talking about multi-different facets to this, and will there be an economic facet to this whole thing? Will they be saying, hey, Vladimir, you knock it off and you stop with the fighting in Ukraine, and you started the war, by the way, and we'll start getting your economy straightened out by maybe opening up some energy cycles, some grain, some trade, and maybe start your economy that is 45% driven by military spending. So that's, there's so much to talk about in this setting up this big summit. It's going to be a lot at stake. But what I thought Trump did brilliantly yesterday is, if there's enough promise, this is just phase one. If we see progress, phase two, I want to happen right away. And that's with Zelensky. And if you want me there, he said, I'll go do it. I will go there. And he also said, if they walk away and aren't sincere, there's going to be a problem. Cut one.
Russia face any consequences if Vladimir Putin does not agree to stop the war after your meeting on Friday?
Yes, they will. Yeah.
What will the consequences be?
There will be
sanctions, tariffs?
There will be, I don't have to say, there will be very severe consequences, yes.
And that's great. And that resonates with Russia. And by the way, they cannot figure out President Trump. I love when people say he's KGB, they've done profiles on him. Please explain to me where the consistent line of figuring out who President Trump is and what he'll do next. I'm sure that Iran was waiting for the fifth set of talks about their nuclear program. Well, on the cusp of that, 24 hours prior, he took out all their facilities. So please don't tell me there's a formula to figuring out Trump. Yesterday, an extremely productive call by all accounts among European leaders Zelensky and the President of the United States. It lasted over an hour, at which time the president said what we all know that he knew, and that is he can't do a deal and swap land for Ukraine. Ukraine has to. And the president doesn't want to do that. That's not his objective. He's looking to set up a situation to stop the fighting and get a sustainable peace so we're not back here in the next 2.5 years. So that's what he's up against. And the more you think about it, on the military base is pretty cool too, because you'll get to see America's military in action. I would not be surprised if there's some dramatic entrance. The president loves to script that UFC style, where Putin's waiting and the president weaves between the military hardware and the fighter jets and shakes his hand. We'll see. Meanwhile, I talked to Don Jr. as well as Zach Witkoff and Eric Trump about their new venture. Let's listen.
This is a tour against the Trump administration's attack on New York City voters. But I continue to say that if Donald Trump wants to pick up the phone and say that he wants to deliver on the cheaper groceries that he ran on, I'm willing to work with him on that. It just can never be a partnership at the expense of the people of the city.
New York City mayoral candidate, who's winning by about 20 points in the latest Siena poll, Zohran Mamdani, says he's willing to work with President Trump despite promising to be President Trump's worst nightmare. So what would this mean for wealthy New Yorkers besides your taxes going up? Let's bring in World Liberty Financial co-founders Eric Trump, Donald Trump Jr., and Zach Witkoff. Welcome, guys. Thanks so much for being here.
So much to be here.
I hate to drag you into politics, but it is New York politics.
I'm shocked that we're going here.
Right. But Eric, your thoughts about the rise of the socialist who does not like capitalism or billionaires?
Well, that's what's scary to me, right? I grew up in New York. My father's name is on every building in New York. I mean, this is a building. This is a city. These are the markets. This is New York Stock Exchange. This is the NASDAQ, right? I mean, this is the epitome of capitalism around the world. And the guy's coming out and actively saying that he wants to shut down capitalism. I mean, it's the antithesis of what New York City is. The guy is wholly, wholly scary. And I think it's a disastrous thing for this state, which has already had an exodus of people out of it.
And Don Jr., when you talk about people that got to make financial decisions, well, the rich don't care. The successful don't care. But take a look. They do move when they're being pushed. For example, the proposal is a 2% tax of income over the year. The top city rate is 5.9%. So add on to that. The city and state, 16.8%. Federal, state, and city rate, 53.8%. So basically, what if you're seeing these numbers, private company or public, what are you going to do?
You're going to move to Florida. You're going to move to Texas. You're going to move somewhere else. The reality is no one wants to pay that much. And the reality that's really sad for actual New Yorkers and middle class New Yorkers is that the wealthiest people, they can move very easily. They can work from wherever they want.
Especially
they've
since
seen
the
that.
Pandemic.
Ever since the pandemic, people realize they don't have to be in an office. They don't have to do these kinds of things. They will move. They are the vast majority of the tax base that funds all of these subsidy programs in New York City. Anyway, you lose 10,000-15,000 of those ultra high net worth individuals, this city is in serious trouble, and no amount of free stuff being promised is going to actually help it. It's a shame, but I think he's going to be great, Mamdani. If he wins, he's going to be great for the rest of the country in the future, because New York City is going to go through some really hard times, and people are going to stop playing with this ridiculous experiment of communism and socialism that has not worked anywhere else in the world.
And to think about it, too, it's propping up in Minneapolis. You got a socialist there and one over in Seattle. Zach, do you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I think the boys said it really well, you know.
Right. So that's why people will make that decision. We'll see what happens. It's hard to imagine them losing with this type of lead. Something else stood out. We thought it was perfect timing. You were here. Among the people that noticed Trump 2 or Trump 47 is running on all cylinders is a New York Times reporter. So we clipped it. I wanted you to get your response to how you think it's going. The fact that he said this. Tyler Page.
He's way more effective at accomplishing his agenda with having that time out of office, because a lot of his aides, Russ Vogt, those sorts of officials, spent their time out of government planning for this term. And so what they've done is an onslaught of executive orders in the first 6 months that accomplished a lot of their goals very quickly because he knew what they wanted to do.
Eric, is he right?
He's right. I can't believe I'm actually hearing this.
Where are we?
Right. My father's throwing so much lead in the air that they literally don't know how to counter program. It's amazing. And listen, while I think we won in 2020, I think the greatest thing ever was having those 4 years off. We have the Senate. We have the House. We have a 6-3 majority in the Supreme Court. My father has a cabinet that's unparalleled. And what they're doing every single day, I mean, he's making America proud. He's making transformational change to this country, and this is exactly what we need. Look at our economy right now. Look at the jobs force. Look at the tariffs. Look at how much money's coming back. Look at inflation. I mean, our markets, in the last 6 months, they have done a 180. I mean, we were going into a really, really deep place. My father has single-handedly saved this country. Now you watch what he's doing in Washington, D.C. It's a beautiful thing. He's cleaning up the streets. He's getting away with the homelessness. He's doing a great job.
It's also amazing to see he now has a cabinet that is in line with him, right? In the first term, you had people that were coming in, they're kicking the can down. Okay, we're going to wait Trump out. This time, we had 4 years of hell that we went through. We found out who the people were that were actually fighters, people who believed in the America First movement. He brought them all on. So now that you have a cabinet that's actually aligned with the president, not trying to subvert him, you can see what's being done. And what's really great now, for the first time in probably history, the Republicans actually have a great bench for the future. Before it was Trump, and what do you have after Trump? There's no one there. We found out who those people were, who those fighters were in that 4 years, and we needed to go through that hell like addiction, right? You have to hit rock bottom to be able to rise up again.
Yeah.
We hit rock bottom as a country. We know the people who are on our team. They are fighting together as one engine, and the results are incredible.
Zach, your dad's very much part of this.
Yeah, I mean, I know he's super proud to serve the American people and the president, and, you know, he's doing what he can.
What's it like for you to see your dad on the inside and you're on the outside with the guys?
You know, Eric and Don are the two greatest business partners I could ask for. You know, we run a stablecoin infrastructure company called World Liberty Financial. We have the world's fastest growing stablecoin, USD1. We just did this incredible deal yesterday with ALTS, the Alt 5 Sigma Corporation, to acquire $1.5 billion of our token. The stock's currently trading under net asset value by a pretty significant margin. So we're quite excited about the future of the stock. But, yeah, you know, just really proud of my dad. And he's clearly part of the greatest administration, not just of the past few decades, but of all time.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. By the way, you're going to love my next segment. I had a chance to talk to financial expert, especially for the young, the millennials and the Gen Zers, about what they need to know when it comes to financial literacy. You'll be surprised where the deficit is. You'll listen to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
Are you feeling more fulfilled now that you're back to work?
This Friday.
No. I need a vacation.
See the movie that critics are saying is an awesome.
Look at that.
Crowd pleasing. Fist pumping. All out brawl of a film.
You're right about that.
They're coming after our family. Go fix this.
Oh my.
Nobody 2. Rated R. Only in theaters Friday.
Listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
So it's amazing to me how little financial literacy we get in school. And the more you think about it, the more you get into the real world, you think, couldn't we add one course when we're taking math? Just say, okay, for a semester, can we focus on financial literacy? For example, writing a checkbook, keeping a checkbook. Now it's Venmo. Now it's Zelle. Now everything's ATM. That was new for a while. And then when you talk about credit scores and what matters and savings accounts and investment accounts, kids are interested in that. Stock market's like betting. It's fun. You follow it. But I never got it. You never got it. Now we have a generation who, by the way, does not understand credit scores. I'm not sure exactly why. It has something to do with everything being digital. You don't really touch money as much. But they don't understand the need for great credit scores from 18 on. How to establish it, even if it's not necessary. How to pay off a credit card. How to take out an application. So I talked to Haley Sachs, who's extremely popular online. Huge Instagram account especially. And she's a financial expert. She talked about the challenges of millennials today. What they do know, and it's not that they're dumb at all. It's just that they don't understand the need to establish good credit. So here's my conversation with Haley. I wanted to share this with you.
Our next guest is one of the biggest influencers, financial influencers on social media, and she knows a thing or two about improving your credit.
You're paying your credit card bill wrong. I'm Mrs. Dow Jones, a millennial finance expert, and here's how to pay your credit card bill the right way. I recommend setting up auto pay for your full credit card balance on your payment due date so you never pay interest. It says here that I can bring your APR down from 25% to 18%. Would that work for you? Thank you. That would be amazing. Can you send that to me in writing? Hi, yes, I'm calling to cancel my old credit card. Gotcha, I'll get that taken care of right now. Wait, stop, don't do that. If you close it, it will damage your credit score and shorten your credit history.
And it looks like Gen Z could use that advice. A new survey shows almost half of Gen Z doesn't know what affects their own credit score. And roughly 1 in 5 have never checked their credit score at all. famed financial influencer known as Mrs. Dow Jones. Haley Sachs joins us now. Haley, does that surprise you? Does that go with what you know anecdotally about Gen Zers?
Oh, that doesn't surprise me at all, Brian. I think that makes complete sense. I mean, when you think about it, it's two issues. One, Gen Z isn't ever formally really taught about money in school and also at home. Most people aren't getting this education. But also, number two, they are able to operate outside of credit because they have options like Venmo and Buy Now Pay Later, where they're able to send money and spend money, and they haven't really had to use it.
Or touch it.
Yes.
Right? They don't really touch money.
Yes.
They don't know what they can change of a 20.
Yeah.
So here's what you say. The survey shows that 45% don't understand what affects their credit score. 25% don't know the range of their credit score, which is, so if you don't know what affects your credit score, but they should know what the credit score means. It's your financial life.
Absolutely. It's your financial GPA. This is the number that lenders are looking at to decide if you can lease a car, what the interest rate is, if you can rent an apartment. There are even some employers who check your credit score. So it's a very important number to know and also to nurture and build.
Absolutely. So you have some tips to improve your credit health. Number one, pay bills on time. That's the auto pay thing you were talking about.
Yes, auto pay is major. You got to pay your bills on time. I also recommend never using more than 30% of your available credit. You want to be careful about your credit utilization.
Right, but you have to have some credit. So some people have no, they have zero debt, which is great.
Yes.
They've never had a credit card, so you don't have any sense of, a bank won't have any sense of what your schedule will be. Lower your credit utilization.
Yes, exactly. So you want to use 30% or less of that available credit.
You look at your credit report, you have a problem, make sure to dispute the errors in the report.
Yes, Brian, a lot of people actually have issues on their credit report that they don't even know about. So make sure that if you check your credit score and it seems very low, that you're actually looking through your credit report to make sure there aren't any issues.
It might be a father, a brother, a sister,
yes,
or people just have the same name as you and
yes,
it's on your score.
Yeah.
Keep old accounts open. Why?
Yeah, so, you know, we all have that old credit card, maybe, you know, the first one that we open and we're not using it as much. But you don't want to close that account even if you aren't using
why?
It. Because credit scores like to see a long credit history. So they want to see that you have been a reliable someone reliable to lend money to for a long time.
And then you say add a positive credit history. What do you mean?
No, you want to improve your, you want to have a long credit history. Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah,
so the longer, the better.
Yes.
And the first time you're really going to test that is when you go to get a loan, right? When they go through, if you're going to go rent an apartment, they want to check to see what kind of tenant you'll be.
Exactly. Right. So, which is, you know, so that you got to make sure that your score is in good shape.
And one of the main reasons that Gen Z doesn't do this, anxiety. It's an anxiety-fueled bracket.
Which you can understand, because when you think about it, they've inherited a really tough economy. There is insane inflation. Wages have not kept up. They have student loan debt. So, you know, having some financial anxiety makes sense, but you have to make sure that you move past that in order to improve your credit score.
And if you want to improve your credit score, follow you on Instagram.
Yes.
I think Haley Sachs, thanks so much.
Thanks
appreciate
so much
it.
For having
you make
me.
Make it so simple and understandable. Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you.
All right. That was Haley Sachs. I hope you picked something from it. And by the way, I actually think that if there's a parenting situation, people talk about having a sex talk. Right after the sex talk, why don't you talk about money? Because I would argue that money might not be more important, and one could lead to the other. Who knows? It's going to be a great half hour coming your way. Don't move. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
This is Jason Chaffetz from the Jason in the House podcast. Join me every Monday to dive deeper into the latest political headlines and chat with remarkable guests.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com
or wherever you download podcasts.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, you know what? One thing I noticed, I had this article. I'm kind of driving the whole staff crazy on both Fox and Friends and here on the Brian Kilmeade Radio Show. And that is, I see this story in the New York Times, how basically, my words, it looks like President Trump's push to get rid of DEI and get rid of affirmative action, that Supreme Court kind of did that, has helped Hollywood. Yeah, has helped Hollywood. They're now hiring white people to do commercials. They're having sexual shows again that show attractive women with attractive men. Remember, we had to have a lesbian and a transgender director in order to get an Oscar. Well, the president has helped the least deserving community, who has given us and ushered in political correctness and cancel culture. He is straightening out Hollywood by what he's doing in Washington. So I thought a guy that didn't need straightening out would be great to talk to, Robert Davi, the singer, actor. Here's my interview last night.
I don't think we've had anybody have this much impact on the country since FDR. I mean, for culturally in particular, certainly in how even our politics is conducted.
I can't believe it. I agree with Chuck Todd. President Trump isn't just leading on policy. He's dominating the culture and bringing a sense of normalcy back to America.
We ended the woke political programming, and we're restoring the Kennedy Center as the premier venue for performing arts anywhere in the country, anywhere in the world. This has the potential to be anywhere in the world. We're going to make it something that people can't even believe. We have some unbelievable plans.
So President Trump today announcing the new class of Kennedy Center honors. Stallone, Sylvester, George Strait, Kiss, among the class going in. He even revealed he's taking a new job.
It's going to be a big evening. I've been asked to host. I said, I'm the president of the United States. Are you fools asking me to do that? Sir, you'll get much higher ratings. So I have agreed to host. It's been a long time. I used to host the Apprentice finales, and we did rather well with that.
Here to weigh in is Robert Davi. He was runner-up to host. He's an actor-director. Robert, your thoughts, because a short time ago, the cast of Hamilton was canceling as he took over the Kennedy Center and replaced their board, and now he's hosting the show. Your thoughts.
I think it's terrific. I think you have to understand, we've seen Donald Trump the last 10 years or so, since 2015, doing these outdoor events, as he says, without a band, and he fills stadiums, hundreds of thousands of people. The media, the cultural aspect of the media around the world that follows Trump. So why wouldn't he host the Kennedy Honors? And I have to congratulate my friend Sylvester Stallone and the others, Gene Simmons from Kiss and Gloria Gaynor, who I did a concert with. He's got George Strait, tremendous group of people, as every year they do. And why shouldn't the president of the United States? The 250th anniversary of America is coming up. Why not start it off with a bang and let the president, who is adept at hosting, as we know from the Apprentice show and also the rallies that he's thrown around the world.
I mean, some of the shows are really funny, but they're all left-wing, and they all don't like Republicans, and they basically told Trump to stay home last term. And he says, okay, I'll replace the board, and I'll host. So that's the ultimate in-your-face. The New York Times writes this. Hollywood is changing for the better, too. It says, Hollywood is hot, horny, and white again. More evidence was needed that the progressive snowflake era of Hollywood is over. Look at Basic Instinct. It's now started. They're coming back with more aggressive shows. Even though they're not worthy of it, the president's push against DEI is saving Hollywood. Your thoughts?
I think it's about time. Let me tell you, I've been in Hollywood for almost 50 years, five decades. And I've seen it creep in, Brian. I've seen the cultural revolution creep in. And I was going to be in a film called Blood In, Blood Out. Taylor Hackford was directing, and I was to play a character called Montana Segura, who was the head of the Under Movement. But because I was not—I was Italian, but not Hispanic, they took the part from me. Now, there's many Hispanics that have played. This is over 10, 15 years ago. My daughter, who is 15 years ago, she's 25 now, 24, she came home from school one time, and she said, Dad, I'm ashamed of being white. This is in California.
I know.
And this is 15 years ago. I'm ashamed of being white. And we've seen this. We have the white population is 62% of the whole of America. And for the last few,
right,
the last decade or so, it's been inundated with being shamed
not
into
anymore.
Being that you're white. You're white supremacist. And this is a breath of fresh air for the 250th anniversary. And all races have sexiness in them. But I think the whole thing with Sydney Sweeney, Caitlin Clark dominating female sports.
Robert,
why not?
We need another hour. Robert, thanks so much.
I love Robert Davi. Great character actor, wonderful personality. For me, he'd be a great talk show host. when we come back, be able to open up the phones and do so much more. Thanks for listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Increasing your intelligence quotient.
What the hell did you just say?
It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, I'm Trey Gowdy, host of the Trey Gowdy Podcast. I hope you will join me every Tuesday and Thursday as we navigate life together and hopefully find ourselves a little bit better on the other side.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I think he just has a hard time accepting that he can't crush Ukraine, a country that he doesn't actually believe is a country. He told us it was a made-up country. But now, with the threats against the Russian economy, with the shot across the bow about secondary sanctions, maybe it's starting to occur to him that he needs to stop this war. But he's certainly trying to deflect any action that the president might take.
So that is the former Secretary of State, National Security Advisor, Russia, Soviet expert during 41's administration and then 43, still best friends with President Bush. And Gaheshi really respects and has been deferential to President Trump nonstop. I'm sure they talk offline. Even though he's unorthodox, and a lot of times people come from academia say, that's not the way you do things. And she's open to it. And that's on and off. You know, she comes on our radio show all the time, too. But she was on Brett Baer's podcast, and she thinks that Vladimir Putin's in bad shape. And she thinks that's part of the reason that he's going to be in Alaska tomorrow talking with the president. I love the fact that there's going to be consequences should Vladimir Putin show up and say, oh, no, I haven't changed my position. Why do you ask? You know, I'm going to continue to do what I do. So here's what I thought was key. When Trump was asked about if they walk away, if he doesn't come to play, for lack of better words, and Trump has made it clear, I'm not going to hear and talk about swapping Ukrainian land. It's not my country. I'm looking to get to a second meeting. Cut one.
Russia face any consequences if Vladimir Putin does not agree to stop the war after your meeting on Friday?
Yes, they will. Yeah.
What will the consequences be?
There will be
sanctions, tariffs?
There will be, I don't have to say, there will be very severe consequences, yes.
Yeah, and look, all you can say is, they said, why you keep talking to Iran? The longer they drag out, the closer they're going to come to a nuclear weapon. And then there's a meeting on Sunday, but there was a bombing on Friday. So don't act like you could figure him out. Don't say, well, this is a KGB guy and he's going to play Trump. It's not possible at this point because it's impossible to play a guy that acts instinctively, that you can't tap his phone. You can tap his phone, but he'll talk to a bunch of people. It doesn't mean he gives away any secrets or his next move. So the other big thing the president's doing is trying to clean up the Capitol, literally power wash the whole place and try to bring the end of this random crime and bring some of the projects, some of the urban areas and to heal. And he's getting some pushback. But the pushback is really ill-advised because there's so many people who legitimately feel that crime's an issue who happen to be Democrats. I'm thinking about Henry Cuellar, who was carjacked in 2023, and the Minnesota congresswoman who was attacked in Washington, D.C., going to her apartment. I imagine a pretty nice area. The other advantage you have is that because the president federalized the troops and took over, the sanctuary city status is done. And Tom Homan brought that up with Martha McCallum yesterday. It's a bit of a long question, but it's worth it. Cut 11.
Let me ask you about the D.C. situation. Does the fact that there's National Guard there now, it's a sanctuary city, like sanctuary cities across the country, but it's unique in that it has federal control, and now you've got National Guard on the ground side by side with ICE, does that combination negate the sanctuary city status in Washington, D.C., at least for these 30 days in terms of what you can do there, Tom?
I think D.C. under federal control is not going to be a sanctuary city. We're working with the police hand in hand. When we encounter a criminal illegal alien, they're going to be turned over to ICE. And that's the way it should be. I'm not saying every illegal alien in D.C. is a criminal, but many are. These are people we're going to focus on. Illegal alien, criminal safety threat in D.C. is not going to be protected. There's no sanctuary for these people in the city of D.C.
So that's going to be great. And that's going to unleash good cops. If this police chief, I have know nothing about her, allows these cops to be cops. So one thing you can't control is the FBI. So the FBI means not going to walk the beat, but they'll be able to investigate, maybe follow through and start and knocking on some doors. So Anthony Coley, I used him last night with Laura Ingraham. He's a MSNBC legal analyst, former Obama official. He knows that, crime is an issue. Maggie Haberman weighed in last night from the New York Times, and she said that these Democrats got to look out because there's nowhere to go on this issue. You're going to go criticize Trump on cracking down on crime when so many in the area live and have that fear after a certain time, or and they understand what the neighborhood used to be like and what it's like now. They don't look at stats to find out if they feel secure. So Anthony Coley said this, and I think he caught the whole network by surprise. Cut 13.
I live in Washington. This is personal for me. Many people are frustrated with crime that we see, particularly committed by juveniles in the city of Washington. People are frustrated, Willie, that they, when they go to CVS to buy deodorant, that they have to get it from behind locked plexiglass.
Wow. That's not good. Let's go to break. So there's people that are telling the truth, and I don't know this guy, but he's telling the truth about how he feels in Washington, D.C., even if it's not good for the Democratic mayor, the Democratic Party. And then Chuck Schumer insincerely says all of this is nothing but hot air. Cut 15.
Senator, are you scared walking around Washington, D.C. these days?
I walk around all the time. I wake up early in the morning sometimes and take a nice walk as the sun is rising around some of the Capitol and the other monuments and things, and I feel perfectly safe. They're full of it.
Full of it. Now, is there anything different about Chuck Schumer than anybody else? Give me a second. It's on the tip of my tongue. Oh, yeah. Chuck Schumer has got this huge cadre of Secret Service because he's minority leader, was majority leader. He doesn't go anywhere by himself, not in New York, not in Washington, wherever he travels. So, of course, he feels secure. Because he's got a bunch of guys, maybe women, who will throw themselves in front of a bullet to protect him. And then you have a city like Chicago with one of the most unproductive mayors in history. He's got a 15% approval rating in Democratic-led Chicago. But yet, when Trump says, maybe I'll go in there with federal troops, he says this, cut 16.
The president has always been intimidated by the intellectual prowess of Black men. And so, of course, he would speak in those petite and puerile terms because he's small.
Okay. Number one, that's the wrong word. I know you like the P word. You want to be like Don King and rhyme things, but you should rhyme with words that make sense or move your point forward. Donald Trump is not intimidated by anybody. I don't know if you've met him. He'll walk in with Vladimir Putin without a translator. He will walk into the UFC. He'll walk out into the crowd where 2 weeks prior he was shot out from bulletproof glass. And when do you think that he was intimidated by Black men who are smart? Are you saying that every Black man around him is not smart? Tim Scott's terrible person? I forgot. Is John James a terrible person? I'm not that bright. I mean, where he comes up with this, and just hope people don't buy it. The good news is that not many people listen to this guy. He's the most unproductive, overwhelmed mayor in the country, and that's saying a lot. Speaking of mayors, I'm fascinated by this story in the New York Times today. It turns out Zohran Mamdani has not gotten an endorsement on the Democratic ticket from Hakeem Jeffries, not from Senator Gillibrand, not from Senator Schumer, not from Dan Goldman. He got one from Jerry Nadler, but he's a waste of human life. So who is he getting advice from? How about President Obama? I was stunned by this. President Obama reached out and had a lengthy conversation with him and offered him advice on how to communicate some policies. Really? President Obama. And then David Axelrod went to his campaign office to find out more about him. Really? And then you have Dan Pfeiffer and John Favreau, speechwriters and aides to President Obama. Why would you see eye to eye with a Democrat that is so far to the left, he's communist, socialist, who doesn't like capitalism. And I'm not going to bore you to fund the police. Let's get rid of special units and let's up the taxes of the wealthy. Only all these policies are ass backwards. And you would think that if the Democrats who have political stake in 2028 and 2026 want to stay away from him, you would think Barack Obama says, hey, listen, I'm retired. I've been out of office 10 years. I don't need this. But instead, he picks up the phone and it looks like he likes the guy. What is there to like? And by the way, his lead is shrinking. One of the most flawed candidates that ever run for office, Andrew Cuomo, who was forced for office because of his personal behavior and some of his decisions, by the way, accusations from various women. He's running, but he has now went from a 23-point deficit, according to a Siena poll, to now a 14-point deficit, followed by Curtis Sliwa, and then followed by single digits, Mr. to me, is Eric Adams, who is a sitting mayor who I never see doing anything in the polls. So in terms of the Siena poll, we at Fox, I know it leans left, but we go with that, the Siena poll. But also, I just don't understand why Barack Obama feels as though this 33-year-old has a lot of the ideas that could be the future of the party. You know who also agrees with that? Michael Moore, the director, the documentarian, who never pushed a plate away, came out and said, why are these Democrats not embracing Mamdani? Don't they want to win elections? My goodness. By the first year and a half that Barack Obama was in office, after he waltzes his way and beats John McCain into office with 59 Senate seats and the House majority, they already knew they'd attack him on Obamacare, on the apology tour. They would eventually take 63 seats from Barack Obama in his first midterm. Democrats have no idea the swinging at ghosts. The president's is moving at such a fast clip, whether it's the Iranian strike, they tried to diminish him, whether they said he was too pro-Netanyahu or not enough Netanyahu. On foreign policy, when it comes to the peace deals, they don't know what to say. They didn't even know the president knew these places on the map existed. Instead, he's bringing everybody together from India to Pakistan, even though there's some dispute there. And then you have what he's doing economically, the big, beautiful law now, what he's doing with troops, what he did at the border. The Democrats have nowhere to go. But I'm shocked that they think the place to go is with Zohran Mamdani, the self-proclaimed socialist who looks up to Bernie Sanders, who's sidelined by the Democratic Party. And Barack Obama and his team are looking to help Mamdani? That's a message you want out? But by the way, did not get the minority vote, which would push him more into the Republicans' camp. Interesting times, right? This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. Make sure you go to BrianKilmeade.com and get tickets August 23rd in Dallas, Texas.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Mr. President, thanks so much for joining us. Truly appreciate it. 24 hours before your Alaska summit, what's your mindset?
Well, I'm going to go there, and I'm representing a lot of people, and especially people that are being killed unnecessarily, like 5,000 to 7,000 soldiers a week. They're not Americans, but their lives, their souls. And if I can stop something, I've stopped 6 wars this year. You know, this was going to be one of my easy ones, but it never works out that way. This turns out to be probably the most difficult. I stopped one that was raging for 35 years, one that was raging in the Congo with Rwanda, you know that, for 31 years. And this one is raging for 3.5 years, and I'm not happy about it. It's ridiculous, and we're going to get it stopped. We're going to get it stopped. I inherited this from Joe Biden, but we're going to get it stopped.
So Vladimir Putin just spoke, and I have the readout, if I could share it with you. Is he's just said the American administration, which, as everyone knows, is making, in my opinion, quite energetic and sincere efforts to stop the hostilities, stop the crisis, and reach agreements that are in the interest of all parties involved in this conflict in order to create long-term conditions of peace between our countries and in Europe and in the world as a whole. If we reach agreements in the area of control over strategic offensive weapons, at the next stage, and then it's cut off. So he seems to be in the right mindset going in. How will you know if he's in the mindset for a ceasefire and a long-term end to the conflict?
Well, I think you'll know that in the first couple of minutes, but I think you already know that because he's coming to Alaska. He's coming to the USA, and I think you know that. I think that's a nice statement. I just heard it. You gave me a little breaking news. I appreciate it. But I think he wants to get it done. I really feel he wanted the whole thing. I think if it weren't me, if it was somebody else, he would be not talking to anybody. He wasn't talking. You know, when I was previous to being elected, unfortunately, the 2020 election where we did so well, it was very unfortunate, the result. But what happened is when I came in, I realized, I said, this is a man that really wants the whole thing. And I think he does want the whole thing. And I think he has wanted the whole thing. But because of a certain relationship that he has with me running this country, he's convinced that he's going to make a deal. He's going to make a deal. I think he's going to. And we're going to find out. I'm going to know very quickly. We're going to go into the meeting. We're going to see him. We're going to, I won't do what Bush did, look him in the eye. I'm not going to do that. I'll look him right in the eye, but I feel a little bit differently than Bush. It didn't work out too well for Bush. Remember this, Brian. Under Bush, they lost a lot of land. Under Obama, they lost a lot of land, Crimea. Under Biden, they would have lost the whole thing if he had won the president. They would have lost the entire Ukraine. And so, had the war started and raging. It would have never started if I was president. Not even a chance. And it didn't for 4 years. You know that. Nobody ever even talked about it. But under Trump, you know what? They got nothing. So, except javelins hitting their tanks and lots of other things. And remember this, I was the one that stopped Nord Stream 2. You know, they always like to say, Trump won Putin. Trump is working for Putin. You know, these crooked people, which they just found out now is all they should be prosecuted. They're so disgraceful. But they made up stories. As Putin knows, I'm the toughest one that he's ever had to deal with. He's never had to deal with anybody like me. And right. Here's the other thing, Brian. They got nothing out of Trump. They got no land. They didn't do a Bush. They didn't do an Obama. And they didn't do a Biden.
So the way I understand it, Mr. President, it's hard to find out exactly what's going on in Russia. That should, by the way, they're made up. Even the people of Russia don't know what's going on. It looks like 45% of their economy is military oriented. Their factories are so depleted. They're having North Koreans work the factories and do their fighting. Do you believe that by saying shrinking down from 50 to 10 days and just a handful of days, was that threat is the reason why Steve Witkoff heard from them that they wanted to meet? Do you think that's the reason we're having this meeting in Alaska, because you were about to put on sanctions?
I think everything has an impact. When I told India, and which essentially took them out of buying oil from Russia, that we're going to charge you because you're dealing with Russia on oil purchases. India was the second largest and getting pretty close to China. China's the largest. And as you know, there was something in the works for that. And then they called and they wanted to meet. We're going to see what the meeting means. But certainly when you lose your second largest customer and you're probably going to lose your first largest customer, I think that probably has a role. I think he respects our country now. He didn't respect it under Biden. Nobody respected us under Biden. But he respects our country now. Right. And we have the hottest country anywhere in the world. We had a country, the market's raging. Look at the reports coming out. Everybody's moving back to the United States, car companies, AI companies. Everybody's moving back. They're all starting their factories now. We've never had anything like this. It is truly the golden age of America, but he respects our country now. He did not respect our country with Biden. Who did?
Right. I know you're a big athlete. You not only watch sports, you play sports. You always have to try to pre-think what's going to happen. You have to picture how it's going to happen so you know how you act. So the one thing that some people have said is the incentive that could get his attention is economic incentives. Are you walking in that room with economic incentives for Russia in order to stop the fighting?
Well, I'd rather not say, because I don't want to play my hand in public, but whatever my hand is, economic incentives and disincentives, maybe are more important in a way, but incentives economically. You know, Russia's got a tremendous potential. They have the largest piece of land by far.
Right.
It's massive. It's got great wealth on it.
But all they do is oil. All they do is oil and gas. They can't even they can't even farm.
But that's okay. Oil and gas is a very profitable business. You know, that's better than I make t-shirts. You know, oil and gas. If you say that's all they do, that's if you're going to have one business that's good, that's the business to have, and they have it.
Got it.
So you know, they have a lot of advantages going over most countries because of the fact they have oil and gas at you know massive numbers like we do, and economic sanctions are very powerful, and economic incentives are very powerful, both.
Mark Thiessen, who I know you respect from the Washington Post, writes this.
I do. He's great.
Vladimir Putin's goal is to buy more time. To avoid that trap, all President Trump has to do is hold firm to his stated position that both sides need to agree on a ceasefire now. He will push for a partial or sectional ceasefire. That would be worse than no ceasefire because it would give Russia a military advantage. Your thoughts on his conclusions?
Well, he's a very talented person, and I think he's a real, you know, journalist. If one I give you the highest, I want to give him the highest accolades. I have a lot of respect for Mark. I read him. I'll talk to him every once in a while, and he has some good thoughts. And so, you know, I don't know that we're going to get an immediate ceasefire, but I think it's going to come. See, I'm more interested in immediate peace deal, getting peace fast. And depending on what happens with my meeting, I'm going to be calling up President Zelensky, and let's get him over to wherever we're going to meet. I don't know where we're going to have the second meeting, but we have an idea of three different locations. And we'll be including the possibility, because it would be by far the easiest, of staying in Alaska. You know, we have big flights of, and he has the same thing. We have a lot of planes going when the head of Russia, the head of the United States, you know, et cetera, go.
So Mr. President, did you tell Zelensky to be ready? Did you tell him to be ready to come should you start making legitimate progress?
I don't want to talk about a second meeting even to him. I don't want to even indicate there might be a second meeting. Maybe there will, maybe there won't. So I don't want to talk that. It's not important enough. But it would be certainly convenient if we had a very good meeting, because I'm going to let them negotiate their deal. I'm not going to negotiate the deal. I'm going to let them negotiate their deal. So we're going to be calling President Zelensky if it's a good meeting. If it's a bad meeting, I'm not calling anybody. I'm going home. I'll call you. I'll do Fox and Friends some morning, and we'll have a lot of fun. But if it's a good meeting, I'm going to call President Zelensky and the European leaders, who, as you know, have a very good relationship with. They agreed to pay 5%, and nobody thought they'd even pay 2%. They were paying 2%, but they weren't paying it, a lot of them. And they're paying 5%. They're very unified. I've never seen anything like it. Nobody can believe what we did. I saved NATO. I saved it the first time and made it very rich the second time. It's quite an achievement, I think.
Yeah, I know you were on with him for about an hour yesterday, but just on what you were saying, the way I understand it, Caroline Leavitt had joined Fox and Friends today, and she said the format is, if I got it right, is you're going to meet, and there's going to be a press conference after. Will you be shoulder to shoulder with Vladimir Putin again? Last time was Helsinki.
We haven't. I thought we had a great press conference last time. It was the fake news tried to make it bad, in particular MSDNC. They tried to make it bad. These are very dishonest people, but it was a great news conference. You know, it was rated phenomenal. And then about 2, 3, 4 hours later, they came up with this stupid scheme about me and Russia and what did we say at the meeting and, you know, where do we get the tapes? You know, the old story. But no, I thought we had a great meeting. And don't forget, we're under a lot of pressure because we had the Russia hoax going on. So I told him, I said, you know, it's going to be very hard. And he told me, too. He understood. I said, it's going to be very hard for us to make an economic deal, economic development deal of any kind, because I have the Russia hoax going on. And anything I do with Russia.
That was 2017.
Say, oh, yeah. I'm owned by Putin, you know, which is not even close.
So Mr. President, you're going to have a press conference today after the meeting, correct?
I'm going to have a press conference. I don't know if it's going to be a joint. We haven't even discussed it. I think it might be nice to have a joint and then separates. So something like that will happen. Or if the meeting doesn't end well, I'll just have a press conference and head out. I'll head back to Washington.
So, yeah, if it's not positive, you might head back. Is there any situation?
I will head back.
Oh, I know that. I mean, you'll just head right back. You won't have the press conference. I know you're coming back. But
no, I would say I'll have a press conference in either event. If it's a negative, I'll have a press conference to say that the war is going to go on and these people are horribly going to continue to shoot each other and kill each other. And I think it's a disgrace. And I'll head back to Washington, or I'll have a press conference with that's positive. You know, in doing six wars, think of it. And I obliterated, and now the term obliterated can be used because the Atomic Energy Commission, everybody said total obliteration. These pilots did a phenomenal job. CNN and their fake reporter tried to, who's just a scammer, CNN tried to say that, well, maybe the hit wasn't quite as good.
Right.
Maybe it wasn't obliteration. Maybe, you know, anything to hurt people, anything to demean. And in this case, they were demeaning the incredible people that flew in an airplane for 36 hours back and forth and did one of the most perfect attacks in the history of our country. No, it was a total obliteration.
And, of course, that him's talking about Iran. We had a great conversation with President Trump. It went about 40 minutes. You just heard about 17. When we come back, among the things we'll talk about is what would failure be like? How is there any scenario where this meeting in Alaska would be a failure?
You're with Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hope you're enjoying the interview with President Trump. We just completed it. Here's we're going to pick up where we left off right before the break. And I just asked him flat out, what does failure look like? Will you admit it? Let's listen.
So let's talk about there's so much going on. And my last question to this real quick, is there any scenario where Donald Trump will look at this meeting in Alaska and say, this was not worth it. I failed.
Yeah. 25%.
And you would say chance. You would say that if he just says, hey, I'm going to just I'm going to stay with me
all the time and energy and went over there and we didn't come out with in a short period of time, not from this meeting. This meeting sets up the second meeting. The second meeting is going to be very, very important because that's going to be a meeting where they make a deal. And I don't want to use the word divvy things up, but, you know, to a certain extent, it's not a bad term. OK. But there will be a give and take as to boundaries, lands, et cetera, et cetera. The second meeting is going to be very, very important. This meeting sets up, it's like a chess game. This meeting sets up the second meeting. But there is a 25% chance that this meeting will not be a successful meeting, in which case I will run the country and we have made America great again already in 6 months.
And you'll hit them with consequences, right? You'll hit them with more sanctions. The Senate sanctions go front and center if he disrespects. Yeah.
Oh, sure. If it's not solved. Look, again, we didn't lose any soldiers. We didn't lose anybody. But this was a war. If I didn't get in here, this could have been World War III, I'm telling you. Biden had no idea. He had no clue what was happening. This was getting so bad. And at a minimum, I've calmed it way down.
So
I think you'd agree with that. Way, way down. But they're still losing thousands of soldiers a week, and we have to we have to get that taken care of.
So in Washington, D.C., you did something substantial, and that is put the National Guard in, federalized troops, get rid of the sanctuary city status, and for 30 days, you're trying to bring some semblance of order, extreme order to Washington, D.C. I want you to hear what the mayor said about what you're doing. This is Mayor Muriel Bowser, and here's what she said, cut to.
We all need to do what we can in our space, in our lane, to protect our city and to protect our autonomy and get to the other side of this guy. Make sure we elect a Democratic House so that we have a backstop to this authoritarian push.
She's not welcoming the additional law enforcement.
Well, she actually is, but she doesn't want to say it, okay? Because crime in Washington, D.C. is totally out of control, worse than ever. And as you know, they fired or something happened to the person that does the stats because they wanted him in this case, I think, to do stats which were much better in terms of crime. And they were changing crimes to, you know, this kind of a crime, that kind of a crime doesn't get counted anymore and all that.
So you don't believe those stats?
It's actually worse. It's worse now than ever before. You know that. Anybody that lives here knows that. I have never had so many calls thanking me. I tell you.
Right.
And I look at those streets, and those streets are safe, and they're going to be very safe in a week or so. Look what I did at the border. I had millions of people coming in the year before. Think of it. Millions and millions of people. And without legislation, you know, Biden said we have to get legislation changed. You didn't need it. That was just an excuse for incompetence.
The last three months,
Brian, we had zero people. It was a zero, zero, and zero. Even I find that hard to believe. But it's like, you know, it's like somebody did it. And I hear the people that do it are the same people that were doing the BLS and all the other different things that they do with the fake reports. But you know what? They gave it a zero. I'll take it. But essentially, it's very close to zero, or it's zero for 90 days now. Nobody believes it's – even the Republicans camp. I'm getting calls from senators and congressmen and women, and they're saying that's amazing. But that is, frankly, I believe it's more difficult than what we have here. But we have inherently some very, very dangerous people living in Washington, D.C., and we got to get them out.
And the president's focusing on doing just that. President of the United States, 45th and 47th, giving us some quality time today. When we come back, you're going to hear more from him, not only talking about what happened with Russia, but we also move on and talk about what's happening with crime in other cities, with Governor Gavin Newsom giving him such a hard time when it comes to gerrymandering, and how the Republicans have a lot more cards to play. And the president fully realizes that, along with a refugee or someone being held wrongly in China, and what the president can do to get the self-made billionaire out, who's a real friend of the West. You'll hear all that and more when you listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. More with President Trump right after this.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we are back. I had a chance to speak to the President of the United States a short time ago. We just brought in the interview. We're hearing most of it, and you're hearing most of it. I mean, literally, it's just 25 minutes long. I want you to hear as he talks about Gavin Newsom, the West Coast, the fires, and the recovery, as well as law and disorder.
Mr. President, do you think that putting these troops in there and this Democratic mayor is not necessarily embracing, at least publicly, is, and what you did in Los Angeles, despite that the governor didn't want it and the mayor didn't want it, you sent in backups, Marines and National Guard. Do you think that might force Democratic cities to crack down on crime so you don't have to?
Yeah, the good politicians, the smart ones, the sane people will, and the other ones will go out of their way to try and show them that I'm wrong on crime. Look, this is another, you know, they call them 80-20s. I think it's 100 to nothing. But they're going to have to handle it the way they want. I'm there to help. But if I see a city going bad, I said it last time. Last time, I went right by every perfect little edict and rule, and I'd let the governors run their stuff, and they'd run it into the ground. I had that wacko in Minnesota. You saw what happened in Minneapolis. And if I didn't send in the troops, you wouldn't have Minnesota. Well, you wouldn't have Minneapolis standing today. You saw how bad it was. But I sent in the troops very late because he wouldn't do it. The whole city was burning down. That was the wacko that ran for vice president.
Governor Waltz.
Yeah, he was a real beauty. But again, I said, if I ever do this again, this is what I was thinking about it. I said, I'm going to act before the fact. I'm not going to act after the fact. And, you know, you see what they did to Portland. You see, it's not going to happen this time. Now, Gavin Newsom wouldn't have a Los Angeles stand. You know, we have the Olympics coming. That was a part of my thinking there, too. We have the Olympics coming. He just lost 25,000 houses to fires that shouldn't have happened. It was only because he didn't allow water to come into that part of Los Angeles or, frankly, into California because he cut off the water. They sent it out to the Pacific Ocean. But I overrode him. After the fires, I overrode him, and they have water coming down. They should be allowing more. We're going to go into that next. But wow. Gavin Newsom, if he would have allowed the water, you wouldn't have had a fire. But I said, if I don't send people in, you're not going to have a city for the Olympics. We have the Olympics coming.
And the World Cup.
You already have 24,000 houses. And by the way, they're not able to get the permits for them. You know, the federal government with Lee Zeldin is fantastic. The federal government got all the permits and gave them all the federal permits necessary. They can build their houses. But the state and the city are not getting them the permits after that.
You know, and I know that for a fact because I know people out there, only 1% of the permits has been given. It's an embarrassment, and they're getting away with it, which is sickening. I want to talk about California.
You know what they want to do? They want to build low-income housing. They want to take away some of the sites that are owned by people and build low-income housing.
You can't do it.
Destroy the whole beauty of that area. I was there right after the fire, very closely to immediately after the fire, as soon as I felt it was, the right time. But immediately. And I met the people. They were all standing in front of their sites. They were literally ashes. The steel was wrapped up in balls. It was like a blowtorch because of the winds. And I went there and I saw every person on two or three streets I went to. Every family was in front of their house with a yellow cord. You can't go on it. And they said, "We want to start immediately, sir." I said, "Why don't you start?" They won't let us. I gave them the federal permits almost immediately. That's the hardest permit to get, by the way. And they still don't have their permits.
You told Mayor Bass, let them do it. And she said she would. She wants them to be safe. He goes, they know how to be safe. It was, to me, it was one of your finest moments because she didn't do anything. You were great.
She said, we'll get them over a 2-year period. Do you remember that?
Yep.
I said, 2 years? You mean 2 days?
Mr. President, I lost all my stuff there in a fire in Malibu in the 90s, and they still hadn't rebuilt it 7 years later. But I want to talk about Gavin Newsom.
Incompetent.
Yeah.
You have an incompetent governor. He's an incompetent governor, and the mayor is grossly incompetent. And that worries me because we have the Olympics going there.
Well, you know, Gavin Newsom's taking you on. He thinks that's his best path to being the next president of the United States, in my view. And he posted on X, he gave you a warning instead of Governor Abbott, saying that if you allow Governor Abbott to go through with his gerrymander, he's going to do that in California. He posted this, I guess trying to take the Trump approach. Donald Trump, Taco Trump, as many call him, missed the deadline. California will now draw new, more beautiful maps. They'll be historic, and they will end the Trump presidency. The Dems will take back the House in the midterms. What's your take on Gavin's warning that you missed?
Well, Gavin is an incompetent governor. The state has gone to hell. You see what's happened to Los Angeles. And if I didn't send the troops in, you probably wouldn't have much of a Los Angeles standing right now. Those troops did a hell of a job. And you know who loved it? The sheriff and the police. Now, after about a week or so, then the sheriff sort of said, well, maybe we can... take a look at the sheriff's statement the first day or two. They asked him, do you need the troops? He said, absolutely, we can't do this by ourselves. Now, he changed his tone about a 2 weeks later because we had already taken care of.
Yeah, there's so much more just to finish up this hour. My interview with President Trump was in a great mood on the eve of the Alaska summit. Don't move.
This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. I told you we talked to President Trump. It was supposed to be 20 minutes. It ended up being close to an hour. So here's more of my interview with the 47th president as he gets set for a busy day and then a long trip tomorrow morning.
I just think it's very interesting, and I don't want to dwell too much on it, but the whole Russia situation with Hillary Clinton comes up with to try to make it seem like you colluded with Russia in order to win an election. You're saying that hurt U.S.-Russian relations because Putin, with all of his terrible track records, that's my view, not yours, perhaps, but that's in my words, with his terrible track record and with his horrible invasion that he did and what he does to his neighbors, he actually didn't infiltrate the election besides hacking John Podesta's emails. And you're saying it hurt U.S. relations throughout your 4 years.
They don't even know about John Podesta's emails. They had a couple of hackers who spent, in some cases, $50, $49.95, $101, and $103.
Right.
That's what they have. And these were hackers. These were people probably in Russia that took ads. They took ads for... had nothing to do with, frankly, Russia. It had nothing to do with me. No, they created a story. I remember when I saw it on one of the networks. They were saying after Hillary lost, this was going to be just a quick 1 day, 2 day excuse for why she lost. And the fake news picked it up and went with it. They do the same thing with the Epstein crap. They do the same exact thing. It's the exact same thing. Anything they can do to demean. So what happens is they picked it up. And I remember it, one of the people, I won't even mention who now because it could be that he's got problems and I'm not going to get involved in that, but got up and said, well, Russia was the reason we lost. And that's the first time I say, Russia? I'm listening to this. I'm saying, this is like the day after the election, shortly after the election. I said, what's that all about? But I didn't think much about it. I figured it was an excuse, which it was. But what happened is the fake news picked it up and made it a 2-year ordeal. Right. And then it turned out with the Mueller report, think of this, 18 different people we had, 18 different people on that Mueller. Everyone was an anti-Trumper. Every single one of them was a negative Trumper. And you know what? They ruled that I did absolutely nothing wrong.
Right.
So in one way, I was very impressed by that, actually, if you want to know the truth. I had somebody of the 18. I had somebody in there who was an angel, because it's almost impossible for that. They could have ruled whatever they wanted to do. They could have made up a story like they do so often. And, you know, guys like Weissman and some of these real scum, the real scum, they were so involved in that. He wrote a book about how, and he was on the committee. I think he was one of the guys on the commission.
Well, he was right. They said he was the brain behind Robert Mueller, who lost his fastball, sadly. I think he's doing some physical problems. Just real quick on that, Melania, the first lady, Melania Trump is suing Hunter Biden for $1 billion because he said that Jeffrey Epstein introduced you to each other. And she's suing Hunter for $1 billion. Is that the right thing to do?
Well, I said go forward. You know, I've done pretty well on these lawsuits lately. And I said go forward with it. Jeffrey Epstein had nothing to do with Melania and introduced. But they do that to demean. They make up stories. I mean,
gotcha.
I can tell you exactly how it was that it was another person, actually. I did meet through another person, but it wasn't Jeffrey Epstein. Yeah, I told her, let's go ahead and do it. I let her use my lawyers.
Right.
She was very upset about it.
Big story out today that China is about to overtake America in the electric car and really outstrip Tesla. They probably took a lot of the technology. Your thoughts about losing the electric car business to China, does that worry you?
I don't like losing any business to China. We're leading in AI. We're leading in so much. They know it. We're way ahead of them in terms of chips. We have Jensen and all these guys that are phenomenal. We're way ahead of them. Now that Blackwell is coming out, it's so advanced that they won't catch it for years. No, we're leading them. The electric car is different. See, I don't, you know, do I care? Yeah, I don't like it. But I am a believer that somebody should buy all cars. You should, if you want to buy a gasoline-powered car, you know, we have more oil and gas than any other country. And I say, if you want to buy something where we have under the ground, you know, the batteries, China has that, but we have oil and gas. And a lot of people want. Look, it seems to be so far like a 7 or 10% market. China's gone all out. If they catch us, you know, they're not coming into here. You know, I have tariffs, so they can't come
in. They can't come in with that brand new car. I want to go back to immigration if I can. Mr. President,
you understand that?
Yeah.
I don't want them destroying our automobile business. Somebody else would let them in, and in about 6 months, we wouldn't have an automobile business in this country.
I know. It's going to cost like $21,000, and Europe's trying to keep them out, too. Mr. President, as you know, you've sealed the border in a way that I don't think anyone thought was possible. But because of that, you have an interesting situation. You have people here for generations that, of course, they're not going to get citizenship, but they've been working on farms. A lot of farmers voted for you. They work in hospitality.
Yep.
A lot of hospitality workers voted for you. They work in meatpacking areas. Do you have a plan? And I know some Republicans are going to get upset by this, but do you have a plan to give them long-term work visas, not citizenship, to not hurt the people, not hurt our economy?
So, as you know, I won the election with the farmers by like 88%. I won the election with the people that want strong borders by probably 100%, I would imagine, right? I mean, how could you vote for somebody that wants open borders, that never called a border patrol, that never went to the site? You know, the borders are never even went to the border. So I must have gotten, I don't know what it is, but let's assume it's like 130%. So I won the border. I won everything. And to be honest, I love all those people. They have a little bit different thing in life. The farmers want to have people that can work very hard in the fields, and the other people don't want to have anybody from outside of our country. And I am working on a plan that I think is going to make everybody very happy. We have to take care of our farmers. We love our farmers. But we also have to take care of people that want total security and safety in our country. We're going to take care of both.
Do you think within 3 months you'll have an answer to the hospitality workers, meat packers, and farmers? Because I think they make up. So within 3 months?
Yep.
Okay.
I think people are going to be happy.
All right.
I want to make, look, they're all great. They love our country. That group of people, the Democrats don't love our country. I think they hate our country. They're crazy. They've gone crazy.
I just got to ask you about Jimmy Lai. He's a self-made billionaire, Hong Kong, friend of the West. And he was taken when Hong Kong was taken by the Chinese government. He's been jailed. His closing arguments today. His son joined me. And I did not know you knew Sebastian. Lai. Here's what he said. Cut three.
Does President Trump know him?
We've been incredibly grateful that the president mentioned that 100% he will free my father. He mentioned it in a radio show with Hugh Hewitt. And it's given our family a lot of hope, because at this point it is about freeing him, but it's about saving his life. I don't know how much longer he has.
see your thoughts, because you're going to be meeting President Xi, and he could do that just by one finger.
I didn't say 100% I'd save him. I said 100% I'm going to be bringing it up, and I've already brought it up. And I'm going to do everything I can to save him. I'm going to do everything. You know, he's a respected guy. He's a good guy. I mean, you could also understand President Xi would not be exactly thrilled by doing it. It was, you know, it was a very nasty period of time in the history of China. I mean, it was a very nasty period of time. With all of that being said, his name has already entered the circle of things that we're talking about, and we'll see what we can do. I really like the son a lot. I love that he's fighting so hard for his father. And his father is, you know, not a young guy. He's, you know, how much longer is he going to live? And I hear he's doing okay health-wise, not great. And we're going to do everything we can.
Chuck Todd came out and said, you're dominating like no president since FDR. And that includes education. Because in education, right. Brown, Columbia, George Washington University, UCLA, all of these universities are straightening up and paying a price. Why did changing the culture matter to you, or does it now that you're back?
Well, it matters a lot. The culture of a country matters so much. That's the same thing about Ukraine. If you look at what's happened to those cities, they've been decimated. Those magnificent spires have all been, almost all of them have been knocked to the ground. They're in smithereens. And, you know, it's so sad. No, culture matters so much. One thing on education that we're doing that you didn't mention, and it's true, these woke, crazy colleges are paying a very big price. And you haven't heard anything yet when you hear some of these settlements that we're doing. But they're paying a big price. But what we're really doing with education, which I think is almost as important, maybe more important, is we're sending it back to the states. And the states are accepting it really gracefully and beautifully. And they want it. They desperately want it. We have 40 states where education would be as good as any place in the world. We have 10 where it won't be so good, because it's like, you know, like a guy like Gavin Newsom, he's not going to run good education, but because he doesn't know how. He's just got a mouth. But a place like Los Angeles is going to be tough. But all over, you go to Iowa, you go to Indiana, you go to all these places, Nebraska, every one of these places, they're going to have, Florida is going to be phenomenal. We're sending education back to the states, and we're getting it out of Washington, D.C., and the bureaucrats. Where, you know, you have people that are involved with, like, Florida from Washington. They've never even been there, and they're running education in Florida. Right. We're sending it back so that Ron can run it, so that all the governors can run it, and they're going to do a great job. Now, 10 states are not going to do as well, but they're the same. Like, a guy like Pritzker won't do a good job with education. He probably doesn't even want it back, but Pritzker won't do a good job. Newsom won't do a good job. You know, the same places that run badly will do a bad job, but 90% of the country is going to do a phenomenal job. We're sending education back to the states where the parents are involved, they love their children, where the teachers are involved, they love the children, and it's not going to be run by the bureaucrats in Washington, D.C. that are destroying. I mean, we have the worst education almost in the world for a top 40 country. You know, we're like 38, 39, and 40 out of 40. In education. So obviously we're doing something wrong. That won't happen for long. When education goes back to these well-run states, it'll run as well as the various places like Denmark, Austria. You know, you have some countries that have like great education. Interestingly, China does very well with education, so you can't blame it on size, but they do very well with education.
And lastly, on behalf of Massapequa, you and Linda McMahon helping keep the chief's name.
Yep.
So that means a lot.
I love Massapequa. I have a lot of friends in Massapequa, including you. But I love Massapequa. I've heard that name for years, okay? And they have a championship team. They always have a great team. I know,
and everything.
I know young people that played on that team. And, you know, great people. And they played. We got to get the name back to the Chiefs. And you know what? They're demeaning the Indians by taking over. It's actually the opposite of what they think. They're demeaning.
They are.
That's a place. And that town is sort of based around that whole football thing that they have going there. So we're working hard. You know, it's a state problem, not a federal problem. So we have to interject, and we've done that, into the state. But the state is fighting us very hard. But I think we'll be successful with it.
You're always successful. Mr. President, thanks so much. Best of luck in Alaska. And I look forward to seeing you walking on the military base and greeting Vladimir Putin.
And we'll do the best we can. And I think we'll have a good result in the end.
All right. Go get him. Thanks so much,
Thank
Mr. President.
Thank you very much, Brian.
Appreciate it.
Very good. Thank you.
Very nice of the President of the United States to give us that type of time. And he's got a huge agenda today. In 24 hours. He's going to be in Alaska, and he's going to meet with President Putin, who said some nice things this morning. You heard how that interview began. He made some statements that he thinks the Americans are making a sincere effort to bring peace to the area. So I don't care what you believe, but he went out of his way to say that. That's not usually the posture Vladimir Putin has towards anything American. But as Dan Hoffman told us yesterday, don't believe it. He hates us anyway. But for Donald Trump, doesn't matter. He wants to get this thing done. He wants the ceasefire. He wants a permanent peace. And he wants they want security. And he also knows this. President is not in control of whether Ukraine gives up land or not. That's not him. He's there to facilitate a deal and see the opportunities probably better than anybody else. He wants a second meeting, and he wants Zelensky ready to go. He said, why not just do it in Alaska? By the way, go to BrianKilmeade.com. On Fox Nation, I'll be streaming next Saturday night on the 23rd of August. History, Liberty, and Laughs. Winspear Opera House, AT&T Theater. November 1st, Potsdam, Pennsylvania. September 27th, Richmond, Virginia.
It's the Will Cain Show. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday on FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss a show. Get the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're here. It's been a busy morning already. The President of the United States has joined us. We'll bring back some of those cuts throughout the day. You know, we were supposed to talk 20. We talked 40 and barely scratched the surface on all that he's doing. I mean, it's not even me searching topics. It's everything he's handling at once. You just have to picture, ask yourself, what's the most important thing, whether it's the gerrymandering and the standoff in Texas and what it means for Florida and others. Whether it's obviously with the Alaska summit is the number one story. Number two, the D.C. police, that situation, the rise of socialism on the left. You're seeing all that take place in real time. And you also have, on a side note, 144 nominees just sitting on ice right now because of the partisanship. And we'll see about the crackdown on law and order in America. Dean Cain's going to join us at the bottom of the hour. Dean Cain is one person who thought, you know what, I'm going to lead the way. Obviously successful actor, cut his teeth in Superman and joined ICE. And that is, he joined, now it looks like 100,000 different applicants are trying to fill 10,000 jobs. And the president also talked about what he was going to do in terms of illegal immigration. Now that the border's sealed, what are you going to do about the farmers, the hospitality workers? What are you going to do about the meat packers, many of which are here illegally but have been here for decades? Don't give them citizenship. What about long-term work visas? Mark Thiessen joins us now, a former speechwriter. Right now, he is a Fox News contributor and a Washington Post columnist and a fellow at AEI. Mark, welcome back.
Good to be with you, Brian.
So, Mark, I'm going to get the president brought you up in our interview, and I'm going to play that in a little while. But first, give everybody an understanding who didn't get the subscription or their paperboy got lost and didn't read your column today about what you expect to happen tomorrow and what you're worried about.
Well, so I'm actually not that worried. I think that the people who are worried are the people who are not listening to what Trump actually says he's planning to do. First of all, meeting with Putin, no problem with meeting Putin. I think this was never going to end until Trump looked him in the eye and decided whether or not he was serious about peace. I think the president is absolutely right that Putin wants all of Ukraine. The only reason that he is even considering peace is because he's afraid of Donald Trump. Donald Trump just brought down secondary sanctions on India, which is the second largest purchaser of Russian oil. The only thing that's key, you pointed out very correctly, that 45% of Russian revenues are going to the war effort. They've got double-digit inflation. They've got labor shortages. Their economy is in collapse. Only thing propping them up is oil. And Trump just targeted their second largest purchaser of oil in India. And he was about to, until this summit, he was about to bring down the hammer on China, which is the number one purchaser of Russian oil. If he does that, if he drives Russian oil sales from the global market the way he did with Iran in his first term, Russia's going to collapse. They can't sustain that. And so Putin is coming into this summit weak. He's militarily weak. He's economically weak. And Trump holds all the cards. Trump is going to see, look him in the eye and see whether he thinks a peace deal is possible. And if it's not, he said, there's going to be severe consequences. So I think he's doing the right thing. He's not going to cut. He said he's not going to cut a deal without Ukraine. It's not in my place to negotiate a deal. I'm going to bring Ukraine in if I think there's a deal possible, and they'll negotiate it. So I think he's handling this right, and I'm very hopeful.
So I want to hear. I brought you up and took a cut from your column. So let's listen.
Mark Thiessen, who I know you respect from the Washington Post, writes this.
I do. He's great.
Vladimir Putin's goal is to buy more time. To avoid that trap, all President Trump has to do is hold firm to his stated position that both sides need to agree on a ceasefire now. He will push for a partial or sectional ceasefire. That would be worse than no ceasefire because it would give Russia a military advantage. Your thoughts on his conclusions?
Well, he's a very talented person, and I think he's a real, journalist. I want to give him the highest accolades. I have a lot of respect for Mark. I read him. I'll talk to him every once in a while, and he has some good thoughts. I don't know that we're going to get an immediate ceasefire, but I think it's going to come. See, I'm more interested in immediate peace deal, getting peace fast. And depending on what happens with my meeting, I'm going to be calling up President Zelensky, and let's get him over to wherever we're going to meet. I don't know where we're going to have the second meeting, but we have an idea of three different locations, and we'll be including the possibility, because it would be by far the easiest, of staying in Alaska. You know, we have big flights of, and he has the same thing. We have a lot of planes going when the head of Russia, the head of the United States, et cetera, et cetera.
So I asked him, too. I said, do you think that Zelensky should be ready? Are you going to call him to go there? And he said, well, we'll see. Yeah. So your thoughts. He likes you. He obviously respects you, by the way.
Yeah, well, the feeling is mutual. I think he's just killing it, and we could talk about all the ways that he's killing it outside of foreign policy, from the Iranian nuclear strikes to cleaning up D.C. to shutting down the border to winning in the Supreme Court to, now making KISS a Kennedy Center honoree. I got the list of things that I love about Donald Trump's second term is growing by the day. So feeling is completely mutual. Look, here's the thing. You need to, when you go into a negotiation, and Trump knows this better than anyone because he's a great negotiator, you have to understand what the other guy's strategy is, right? And what Putin's strategy, Putin is coming into this negotiation because he feels the economic hanger preparing to come down. And so what he wants to do is drag this process out. He wants to give Trump enough hope that Trump likes to call it, he's tapping me along, right? He wants to tap Trump along a little more without appearing to be tapping him along. So if he's smart, he's going to sound like he wants to make peace. He's going to offer some sort of proposals and try and drag out the negotiations. Of course, dragging out land negotiations is going to take a long time, and it's going to take a lot of negotiation, all that. He's trying to avoid the inevitable, which is the crushing economic sanctions and tariffs. And so that's his strategy going in. So Trump has to use those and say, look, I want you to stop the fighting now. I want this to end. If this war isn't ended, within days, then the consequences are going to be very severe, which is sort of what he said the other day at the Kennedy Center. And Putin's going to have to show at some point. Putin, you could see how Trump's frustration with Putin's nice words is wearing thin, right? He's been saying how I talked to Vladimir, and then the next night he's bombing a nursing home. The next that night he's bombing a school, and if Putin can't keep doing that, he's going to have to sit down and actually deliver for Trump, or else Trump's going to call his bluff and bring down the economic hammer on him. And the answer to that is that point is we sanction the hell out of his economy, we crush his oil sector, and we allow the Europeans to buy even more weapons for Ukraine so that they can start punishing military strikes on the Russians. And combine, attack both his military and his economic weakness.
Here's what Condoleezza Rice said. She had an interesting take with Brett last night, cut four.
I think he just has a hard time accepting that he can't crush Ukraine, a country that he doesn't actually believe is a country. He told us it was a made-up country. But now, with the threats against the Russian economy, with a shot across the bow about secondary sanctions, maybe it's starting to occur to him that he needs to stop this war. But he's certainly trying to deflect any action that the president might take.
So, I mean, she's open to the whole thing. She's somebody from a traditional background who is open to somebody acting in an unorthodox way. It doesn't mean it's wrong.
Yeah, she's right about that Trump is handling this right and that Putin is weak and all the rest of it. And but I want to come back to this issue about the sectional, possible sectional ceasefire, because this, think about what ways Putin might try and placate Trump. He might say, okay, I'll tell you what, we'll have a ceasefire in Zaporizhia and Kherson, but not in Donbass, which is what we're fighting about. That is a win for, that would be a win for Putin, because what Putin then does is he moves his troops to the area that he wants to fight in, and he doesn't have to worry about the Ukrainians on the other parts of the front line. And what he's trying to do is he's trying to get all of Donbass, and he doesn't want to give anything up for that, right? The reason why he wants that is not just because he wants the territory, is because there's a natural Ukrainian line of defense that they've built that he has not been able to cross military or defeat militarily. And if he gets all of Donbass, then it's all open fields. There's no natural barriers. It'll take the Ukrainians billions of dollars and years to build up new defensive barriers around the new borders. And that's setting up the third invasion. So what he wants to get through the three and a half years more of Donald Trump, potentially pause the war, and then set it up so when he's got a weak American president like he did with Obama and with Biden, that he can start the war again and finish the job. And if he has all of Donbass, he can just, you know, it's going to be very hard to stop him from driving towards Kiev.
I know, and that'll be a huge disaster. And I think that was explained to the president in his hour-long meeting with the European Union yesterday.
Yep.
And the fact that they all hung up respectfully and with the same understanding on the readout, I thought was pretty impressive. Yep. So, Mark, do you live in D.C.?
I live outside of D.C. I live in Alexandria.
All right. So
I do not live in, but I work in D.C.
All right. So I want you to hear what Chuck Schumer said about the reality of things on the ground in Washington, D.C.
Senator, are you scared walking around Washington, D.C. these days?
I walk around all the time. I wake up early in the morning sometimes and take a nice walk as the sun is rising around some of the Capitol and the other monuments and things, and I feel perfectly safe. They're full of it.
Really? Is there anything different about Chuck Schumer's life than anybody else's life?
Well, first of all, he's walking around D.C. with a security detail.
Yes.
Because he's the Democratic leader. So I feel pretty safe if I had a Capitol Police security detail. I think that would be pretty safe. You know who doesn't have a security detail? Henry Cuellar, who was carjacked at gunpoint in the Navy Yard, which is an upscale D.C. neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know who didn't have a security detail? Those two staffers from the Israeli embassy who were murdered outside a Jewish museum. You know who didn't have a security detail? The congressional staffer who was just killed near the White House. You know who didn't have a security detail? Big Balls, who was beaten within an inch of his life. You know who doesn't have a security detail? All the people in Anacostia who are seeing gangbangers shooting people up outside. There were 170 murders in D.C. last year. That is the fourth highest murder rate in the entire country. It's higher than Compton, California, which is one of the most brutal murderous areas in the country. So Chuck Schumer with his security detail, you know, tagging, oh, I feel safe. You know, good Lord, what a moron.
It gets worse because John Oliver was able to find out that Chuck Schumer made up a fictional family from my town over the course of 15 years called the Baileys from Massapequa. I mean, literally, he made this up, and he would use the Baileys as a touchstone on all major issues to show how he's in touch with people and how he's a man of the people. Listen to this. Cut 21.
They're a middle-class couple in Massapequa, which is a suburb on Long Island.
Joe and Eileen Bailey, this middle-class couple, they bought into Reagan Republicanism in 1980.
Right. Joe and Eileen are worried about losing their jobs or their friends' jobs.
The Baileys really don't believe in trickle down. They don't believe in a whole lot of government spending, but they believe in tax breaks for kids to go to college.
He's an insurance adjuster and lives in the New York suburbs. By New York standards, he makes $50,000 a year. If he lived in the middle of the country, he'd make $40,000. Wife works in a medical office. She makes about $20,000. She might make $15,000 elsewhere. And, you know, I have guided my political life through the Baileys.
So the only problem with those stories is the Baileys don't exist. And I mean,
Brian, we now know the secret of why Chuck Schumer is wrong on everything. He's talking to his imaginary friends.
Right. Family. Not just friends, family.
He's sitting in his bedroom with his teddy bear, talking to his imaginary friend over a tea set, trying to figure out what his policy should be on trickle-down economics.
This is beyond crazy. Listen to John Oliver.
But you heard him. The Baileys have guided Chuck Schumer's political life, which is a little weird given they don't exist. Seriously, he invented them. But crucially, for all he talks about how much he loves the Baileys, they don't seem to return that love. Of the six votes the Baileys had across the last three presidential elections, five went to Donald Trump, most recently because of crime. They also think the civil rights movement went too far and aren't against immigration, just illegal immigration. And this is the couple who, in Chuck Schumer's own words, have guided his political life. And at this point, it might be worth asking, is that a good idea? Because the truth is, Schumer's devotion to his imaginary friends may help explain why he and the Democratic Party have been so underwhelming in recent years. Because he seems to be focusing a huge amount on the interest of the Baileys from Long Island, while forgetting other voters actually exist.
I mean, is he right? I mean, is this the craziest thing, Mark?
It's stunning that he's been talking about these people for years and they don't exist.
And he wrote in a book about them.
It's like, truly, like, what did he think? No one was going to look eventually to see them? Chuck Schumer is just, he's so jumped the shark as a Democratic leader. It's stunning. The only reason I would not want Chuck Schumer to step aside is because probably the person who replaced him will be AOC.
30 seconds. Barack Obama reached out to Mamdani. They spoke for at length. Axelrod, Dan Pfeiffer, all the Obamaites are running to Mamdani. Why? Even current, there's no Democrat that's running to him outside some crazies like AOC. Why would mainstream Democrat Obama team run to him?
Because he's going to win. That's what it's looking like. I mean, Cuomo and Adams and everyone, their disapproval is so high. You know, they're probably he's inherited a race with, you know, people who can't, the only people who can't beat him. So, you know, that's why they're running to him. But look, the Democratic Party, if you look down the trajectory, they've lost support since the 1990s. They've never been above 50% approval. So, they need to go back to Clintonism, not Mamdaniism.
And Schumer's got 38% approval in New York. Thanks so much, Mark. Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Is there any scenario where Donald Trump will look at this meeting in Alaska and say, this was not worth it, I failed?
Yeah, 25%.
And you would say, yes. You would say that if he just says, hey, I'm going to stay with me.
All the time and energy and went over there and we didn't come out with, in a short period of time, not from this meeting. This meeting sets up the second meeting. The second meeting is going to be very, very important because that's going to be a meeting where they make a deal. And I don't want to use the word divvy things up, but, you know, to a certain extent, it's not a bad term. OK,
so the president of the United States is open to the fact that, you know, things might not break the way he wants, but he's giving it a shot. To him, trying is, you know, he wants to win every time, but he goes ahead. His goal is this. His goal is to help two countries stop fighting each other. So, you know, he feels as if, I just want to move this ball forward. And if you don't want me in round two, I'm not going to go. But I know they're going to want him in round two. But what was interesting is, in an earlier part of the interview we just did with the president, he said, I'd like to have it in Alaska. And I'm thinking to myself, does he want Zelensky on a plane ready to go to see if Putin would ever deal with him? Because the only reason Zelensky's not there is because Putin didn't want him there. Trump wanted him there. So crazy times, interesting times. Dean Cain is next. Dean Cain did this thing, and did a great thing. He joined ICE, and he wants to be almost like a ceremonial member, a contributor, get everybody to know you should go do this. Hollywood had a huge problem with that. We'll talk to Dean about that in a moment.
It's Will Kane Country. Watch it live at noon Eastern Monday through Thursday at foxnews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss the show. Listen and follow the podcast 5 days a week at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. He's so busy,
he'll make your head spin.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome back, everyone. It's been a real busy morning. A lot of consequential things going on. Washington, D.C. continuing their crackdown. The Democrats do not know how to fight against this. I think it's pretty real. Also, the crackdown continues at our border. I just spoke to the President of the United States about what's happening here. Might be have some type of pathway to long-term work visas, not citizenship for the farmers, hospitality workers, meat packers, things like that. But one of the big stories was, and the controversy is with the crackdown on our border and illegal immigrants has been ICE. Because they've been doxxed before, because they've been targeted, they wear masks in many cases. They want to go in. They don't want their families hit. And now in these sanctuary cities, you have these citizens or these so-called citizens who are attacking the ICE members, which makes it tough to keep morale up and keep the numbers up. They need about 10,000 ICE agents. So they put out applications. They put in incentives. And that caught the attention of our next guest, a great friend of the network, great friend of the show, and a great guy, Dean Cain, joined us now, actor, producer. So, Dean, when people are reading these stories, they think to themselves, wow, I hope they figure this out. You look at this story and say, I think I'll sign up. Why did you sign up?
Just like you said, to be part of the solution, not the problem. And when I was so back in the day when it was defund the police, that's when I joined the police force. I became a law enforcement officer almost 10 years ago, a reserve police officer in Pocatello, Idaho, and a deputy sheriff, fully sworn deputy sheriff in Frederick County, Virginia. And this is another situation where I was looking at this and I thought, why are we attacking our ICE agents? This is insane. Why are we trying to vilify them? Why are congressmen and women trying to vilify our law enforcement, federal law enforcement agents who are just trying to save Americans? They're trying to keep American citizens safe from drug trafficking, from human trafficking, from all of this crazy, crazy crime. And I thought, this is insane. So I put out a part of their recruiting video and I said, you know, join ICE, you can get $50,000 signing bonus, student loans repaid, all kinds of great stuff. And it kind of came across as though I had joined ICE and I hadn't. But then once that went out there, I spoke to some friends at ICE and I said, you know what? You know, it's already out. Why don't I? What a good idea. Let's do it. So and I blame Jesse Waters for it because Jesse put something out on his show that made everybody believe I was an ICE officer. So one thing led to another. And next week I will be an ICE officer. So I'm going to
get sworn in.
Up.
Yeah.
Pardon me.
Where are you going to get sworn in?
Well, I don't want to say just yet, but one of the federal training facilities. I don't want anybody to, but I'm going to do it next week, midweek.
Wow.
So I'm excited.
That's great. I mean, you still got this movie career. You produce everything that you're in. You write it. You do it all. Some of your people that are still in Hollywood, even though they're benefiting from the end of political correctness and DEI, are taking you on. John Leguizamo, cut 28.
What kind of loser volunteers to be an ICE officer? What a moron. Dean Cain, your pronouns are has been.
I mean, moron to be in law enforcement? I mean, what is he talking about? Does that bother you?
Oh, that was like a knockout punch, Brian. I don't know how I'm ever going to recover from that bad boy. Listen, I like John Leguizamo, so that's a little bit disappointing, you know? I think he's a very talented actor, a very good guy, but there are rules. One of the rules is don't drunk tweet from a concert in the bathroom, because that looks like where he was.
Ah.
So I don't know. I mean, bless John. I understand, you know, whatever. He's Colombian by birth and whatever. And he should be, you know, what I find actually is the most vehement defenders of our ICE agents and our immigration enforcement are people who are legal immigrants. Legal immigrants really, really pay attention, and legal immigrants don't like people jumping in front of the line. And so it's going to be interesting to see how it goes, but I'm not worried about Hollywood attacking me. They can attack all they want to.
Right. And just some of the blowback, but you've been dealing with that because you came out and said, hey, I'm a Republican early on. So you've been dealing with some of that blowback. But now we find out when it comes to Hollywood, they're beginning to hire this thing called white people again to do commercials. Mm-hmm. They're beginning to have women look attractive and admit it. They're making movies that you don't have to be a transgender director in order to be eligible in order to have a successful movie. So the political correctness that they started is now getting straightened out through nothing they've done because of the president they don't like. There's no justice there.
No, none at all. But it's great to see someone like Gina Carano, who was a huge victim of this, because she tweeted out something that they didn't like, and they booted her off of Star Wars. Well, Elon Musk backed her, and she won her case. You know, or they settled the case, I'm sure, for a very tidy sum. So good for her, and good to see those things happening. Even President Trump suing CBS and straightening that out when they just, you know, get out there and lie and put one narrative forward. So I like the fact that things seem to be changing. I'll go back to President Trump's words on that early, which were "go woke, go broke," and that is seeming to be true. So I'm really happy to see things switching. But I've never changed. I've decided to speak my mind the entire time. And listen, I'm not hateful. That's what kills me. I'm totally inclusive. I love everybody. This is great. I want everybody to be successful. But some of these ideas are insane.
So people think that if you're cracking down illegal immigration, that you're cracking down on Hispanics or minorities. You're cracking down on people who got here illegally. Do you know there's a huge surge of Chinese here? I don't know where the heck they are. You know who doesn't know? ICE doesn't know where they are. We're trying to hunt them down right now.
There's That's absolutely true.
Iranians started scooping up Iranians. I'm not anti-Iranian, but they have sleeper agents here that they were bragging about. The other thing I want you to take a look at is you know the film festival business, but you know how valuable it is to movie producers. So in Toronto, Film Festival, is it a big one?
Yes, very big.
So did you hear about this documentary that came out and it says The Road Between Us, and it goes ahead and recounts through video, some of which was put out by Hamas. They were so proud of it, the horrific things that happened on October 7th. And now it looks like they're not going to be allowed to show the documentary. You know what the reason is? They say because they don't have the rights to the Hamas video that they put on social media. The producers said, this is BS. We have insurance for things like that. If they're going to get sued, they're going to sue us. How unbelievable is that? That in Canada, they don't want a movie that makes maybe the Israelis look sympathetic as victims of terror activity.
I would say it's shocking, but it's not shocking at all. You know, it's not shocking at all because it's Israel, and they're going to demonize Israel every single time. This film documentary sounds like a fantastic thing that I think everybody should see and try and understand. That's an excuse. That's baloney. They should absolutely have this in the film festival. They should show it. I heard their concern was security. You know, and that's the kind of thing is what they're doing. It's the same thing about me joining ICE. Everybody attacking you, so you won't do it. And it's a way to keep you from doing it, from standing up, keep that movie from getting out there. And I think that is, it's censorship in a sense, and it's intimidation, and it's disgusting.
Yeah, here's what they said. The message to the festival is this. The truth cannot be erased. The atrocities committed by Hamas cannot be erased or denied. It would put in perspective why they're so determined to make sure they're never victims again, which I don't think people fully understand or they choose not to. Lastly, Bravo has one of these reality stars that almost everybody I talk to has never heard of this woman. But she decides that, and I guess she's in 2018, she was one of the housewife shows. She decides that if you're a Republican, you should not eat ethnic food. Watch.
I've had it with white people that triple Trumped.
Yeah.
That have the nerve and the audacity to walk into a Mexican restaurant, a Chinese restaurant, an Indian restaurant, go to perhaps their gay hairdresser friendly. I don't think you should be able to enjoy anything but Cracker Barrel. And if you want to triple Trump and you want to browbeat DEI and you want to browbeat gay people and you want to browbeat black people as you've been doing for 400 years, and you want to browbeat this generation of immigrants that come over here and open up businesses earnestly, pay their taxes, white people that triple Trump should be banned, boycotted from enjoying the best thing that America has to offer, which is multiculturalism. Get your fat out of the Mexican restaurant. Get your fat over to Cracker Barrel.
Dean, really? I have to give up my gay hairdresser? I mean, that's the bridge too far. So,
Brian, your hair looks fantastic.
Thank you.
There's no way you're giving up your gay hairdresser.
Right.
It's not happening.
So,
y también hablo español. Entonces, ¿puedo comer o no?
Wow.
You know, I speak Spanish. So can I eat there? I don't know. I'm Japanese. Does that make me okay?
No, did you triple Trump?
You made me listen to that.
Did you triple Trump?
I triple Trump the hell out of it. You made me listen to that, Brian, and I am dumber as a result. I have lost brain cells from that. That is the most ridiculous, insane thing to say. It's stupid. Let's hurt Mexican restaurants and Mexican businesses and Chinese food and everything else because we're white, because Trump won. I don't get it. Those businesses want to stay in business. They want to work. We are a pluralistic society. It's not our strength, it's our multiculturalism. It's our united values. So that makes me sick, but that's typical of what people say in Hollywood. And I'm glad she spoke up and exposed herself for being an absolute idiot.
All right. And which you're not, by the way, for the record. And I don't think you should give up any of those foods. So Taylor Swift is dating, I don't know if you heard Travis Kelce, if you want to jot that down. Mm-hmm. So she hopped on the Kelce podcast and said this about sports fans loving her. Cut 29.
I think we all know that if there's one thing that male sports fans want to see in their spaces and on their screens, it's more of me.
She's having fun, but she does think that, and she does believe it. And I don't know if the stats back it up or not. But I think that she believes that she brought a lot of young girls to football games. Between that and flag football, it's the smartest thing ever that the NFL did. Because now you even have that as a college sport. And then she hops in. It's been a boon for the number one sport in the country. You're a football player. How do you feel about it?
The more the merrier, baby. The more the merrier. Everybody jump in and watch. It's the greatest sport ever invented, in my opinion. Having played it for so long and love it so much. I'm just no fan of Kansas City because I'm a Buffalo guy and they keep knocking us out of the playoffs. So if she has brought a lot of attention to it, a lot of people who never watched before, and good for her. Good deal. Way to go, Travis, except you need to lose to Buffalo move from here on out.
So how do you feel about Travis Kelce admitting for the last 2 years he's been distracted doing other things and now he's going to focus? I mean, I watched him walk at the Super Bowl. I don't know what he was doing, but do you give him an excuse? Do you give him a pass?
Well, I mean, he's still Travis Kelce. He's still first ballot Hall of Famer. He's phenomenal as a player. Maybe he was distracted, but there comes a point in time when you get on in years in the NFL and you start to feel it, and he doesn't have a whole lot of time left. So I think he better stop walking and keep being the Hall of Famer that he is. But I don't need him to do against Buffalo again. But, you know, but if he was distracted, you know, there was a lot going on, man. He still played very well, but he hadn't been the Travis Kelce of old. And we'll see if he can still pull that off at this point in time in this season. And good for him, but just don't do it against Buffalo.
Exactly. I hear you. I think America's pulling for Buffalo this year, dare I say. And lastly, I just think that Derek Jeter did it right. He waited till he was done. Then he picked the right model. You know, he had one model after another, but didn't get married. He waited to finish, and now he's got a family. Nothing, there's no way, you know, you have to worry about him running to Seattle now. Someone else raised my child.
There's a reason he's the captain.
Right. Absolutely.
There's a reason he's the captain. And I salute him.
Hey, so Dean, I look forward to seeing you out there. It's so great that you joined ICE, putting out with the blowback, but not giving the hate back. Dean Cain, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brian. Classy act, my friend.
All right. Back in a moment.
Don't go anywhere. Brian Kilmeade will be right back.
I'm Janice Dean. Join me every Sunday as I focus on stories of hope and people who are truly rays of sunshine in their community and across the world.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com. Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
If you're up on Taylor Swift concerts, there are friendship bracelets, and I received a bunch of them being there, but I wanted to give Taylor Swift one with my number on it. Not right now.
This kind of felt more like I was in an 80s John Hughes movie, and he was just like standing outside of my window with a boombox, just being like, I want to date you.
Yeah.
This is sort of what I've been writing songs about wanting to happen to me since I was a teenager. Yeah.
So explain to that what was going on. That is Jason Kelce, Travis Kelce before he asked her out?
Yeah, so that first part of that clip was when he sort of went to the concert and thought she was attractive. And he said, you know, he was basically saying, like, oh, I gave her a friendship bracelet with my name on it. And then it sort of butted to Taylor on the podcast now saying how he used the podcast as basically his own personal dating app to be like, hey, Taylor, I want to go out with you. And then basically I think that's how it ended up getting her attention in the end. So she was just joking about it. But how also then he sort of did what she always wanted, like the guy to really just go above and beyond to get her, just like the John Hughes movies.
Isn't John Hughes do comedies?
He did, but he did all those like classic 80s ones. Right?
Like 16 Candles?
Yes, I believe so. I'm not the movie expert here in this studio, but that one and then was it The Breakfast Club, right? And some others.
Couple of things. Number one, I think there's got to be something wrong that they're not married yet.
I disagree. They've only been dating, what?
2 years? I mean, at their age? How old is she? She's 38.
She's not 38. I think she's younger than that. But I mean, they both have quite busy lives. She's 35. Thank you, Eric. So I mean, at some point, probably, and if they're smart, they'll do something. Maybe they are married. We just don't know it. But I mean, they seem, from the clips I've seen, because I haven't had the 2 hours since midnight to watch it, it does seem just like a genuine, real interaction between the three of them.
We'll see what happens this year, because now he's actually got to start training again and working hard.
I mean, he said he's motivated, right, to get the Super Bowl this time after choking last time.
Have we emptied the arsenal on Taylor clips, or is there another one?
We have emptied the arsenal for you. I know you could probably only handle two of them.
All right. So how about this? Let's just end strong. We talked about the impact of a guy that is not a fan of Taylor Swift, and that's President Trump. He was surprised that even Chuck Todd brought up how pervasive the Trump footprint is in America. Let's listen to Chuck Todd.
I don't think we've had anybody have this much impact on the country since FDR. Mm. So I think when you look at it, you know, and that's what is, I mean, mm-hmm. for culturally in particular, certainly in how even our politics is conducted in that sense. I think culturally in particular, and certainly on our political identity, I think he's had, not since FDR, we had this kind of a president with, look, he wants to involve himself in everything. FDR involved himself in almost everything.
He is. I mean, yesterday when he went down to the Kennedy Center, so I asked Grok of all people this morning, I said, what happened in the first term? Why was he, like, was he told to stay home or something? And he was by, who's the creator of All in the Family? Do you guys remember?
Norman Lear.
Norman Lear. Norman Lear was about to get the presidential, some Kennedy Center honor. And he said, I'm not going if Trump goes. So Trump goes, okay. And then other years he said, well, I'll be a distraction. They, like Sally Fields must hate him, right? Barbara Streisand. So he said, I'm not going. But in the back of his mind, it bothers him. He never says anything, just like it must have bothered them that Obama went out of his way and Seth Meyers to humiliate him when he was at the Washington Correspondents' Dinner. But he never acknowledged it. If I asked him that today, President Trump today, he would say, no, I don't really remember. But I know it has. But that's just not the way he rolls.
Too bad you didn't have an opportunity to ask him that today.
I know. And then for him to take over the Kennedy Center, shows it bothered him.
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.